Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Welcome to the Legislative Affairs, Research, and Innovation Committee. The meeting is called to order. Kathy, would you please call the roll?
Trustee Robert Boy.
Here.
Trustee John Butler.
Here.
Trustee Wheeler Coleman.
Here.
Trustee Robert Marshall.
Here.
Trustee Tim Struthers.
Here.
Board Chair Mark Strauss.
Here.
Committee Chair Sherilyn Moore.
Here. Thank you. Mr. Blakemore, would you please confirm that appropriate notices of this meeting have been provided?
Madam Chair, this meeting has been called pursuant to the Illinois Open Meetings Act, and you do have a quorum.
Thank you. May I have a motion to approve the committee agenda as proposed? Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion's approved. We have a motion to approve the minutes of the November 12, 2015 Legislative Affairs, Research, and Innovation Committee meeting.
So moved.
Have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
The motion's approved. I want to welcome University Advisory Committee representatives present here today. Dr. Gibo? No? Steve Bilta? Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Good. Welcome to the meeting.
Thank you.
Professor Long, always nice to see you.
Thank you very much. You as well.
Are there any comments that either one of you wish to make this morning?
I would just say, as we look at the agenda for today's meeting, that certainly want to offer support for NIU's research mission and changes that have been instituted in the Sponsored Programs Administration. As we think of legislative issues, want to tell you that we have within Faculty Senate and University Council continued to discuss the importance for membership to educate and advocate within the limits of what we can do, but that trying to do that. And as an additional follow-up, we are having a second reading, so our vote on March the 2nd, a little less than 2 weeks, on lowering the voting threshold in University Council to address the bylaws issues that we've talked about before. So those are some updates and support the work that's being done.
Thank you. I also want to thank you publicly for reaching out to me and as President of the Faculty Senate, meeting with the trustees and building the bridges. Certainly appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
I have a few comments because I think it's important that we continue to focus on the positive. It's so easy to fall into the abyss of feeling disenchanted and seeing the difficulties of the state, which I am not going to minimize, and certainly Mr. Mann will give us a review of that. I keep challenging him to bring us good news, and one of these days he will, because I have great faith. But we are doing great things, as Professor Long has said. We continue to do great things at this university. I think first and foremost, we continue to graduate students and put them in the workforce, and that's a legacy of this university. We continue to build programs and build relationships, both in Washington and in Springfield. And Professor Blasey will talk about those relationship building in Washington. The staff, the faculty, continue to be excited and continue to pursue grants and continue to look to ways in which to enhance research that's being done at NIU. We have to remember one of our hallmarks is that we are a public research institution. That is very important that we never forget our commitment to research. The level of sponsored projects has been at a steady $30 million or more the last four complete fiscal years. That's very positive. We are almost exactly on target the first quarter of FY16 with research across the colleges. I also want to recognize David Stone, who I see sitting here in the audience, for the work that he has always done in assuring that we secure grants and giving guidance to faculty in that regard. The university has also been able to continue and refine programs investing in faculty success, so that certainly is a cause to celebrate. We continue to be recognized nationally, and I think that that is very important. And I hope that, Professor Blasey, that sometime in the future we can go back to Washington and meet with the legislators as we had once done and talk about the research that we do here at NIU. I think that message is very important that we continue to communicate that. So at this point, those are my comments. And remember that, you know, that cup, see? Even if it looks like it's down here, it's half full. Just remember that. All right. At this point in the agenda, the chair may recognize members of the public who have complied with state law and Board of Trustee bylaws by registering their written request to address the board with our parliamentarian, Mr. Blakemore. Have you received any timely request to address this meeting?
We have not received any requests at all, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Our agenda today includes verbal reports on state and federal relations, a report on sponsored programs, and our continued focus on research programs, an in-depth look into research in the College of Education, which we're very excited to hear about today. So, first on the agenda is Mr. Mann, and he will tell us what is happening in Springfield. And I spoke to Mike yesterday afternoon, I think on his way back from Springfield, is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, and you didn't have to spend much time in Springfield yesterday, I hear.
No.
Yeah,
no.
It was real quick.
I got the budget mess straightened out, and
yeah, it was done like that. So, would you give us a report on the status of what is happening in Springfield?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. My report to you today will can be broken into two components. One, I'd like to talk a little bit about the pieces of legislation that the General Assembly is considering right now, and then also update you on the Governor's budget address and the components of his proposal for FY 2017. First to the legislation. There are three higher education funding bills that the legislature is considering. Senate Bill 2043 is a bit of a misnomer. It's considered to be a higher education funding bill, but there is no funding for public universities in it. The bill supports the monetary award program and community colleges at levels actually greater than in FY15. And the reason I hesitated there, since there's no FY16 budget, the base budget is still the final appropriation for FY15. Anyway, Senate Bill 2043 has passed both houses. It has been delivered to the governor's office. He has vowed to veto that measure, citing the fact that there are no revenues to support it. House Bill 4539 is a Republican higher education bill counterproposal that includes funding for public universities at 80% of our FY15 final appropriation, in other words, a 20% reduction. It includes funding for community colleges at 90% of their base funding, which is a 10% reduction, and holds the monetary holds funding for the monetary award program flat at FY15 final levels. And then finally, there's a Senate Bill 2269, which is a public university-only funding bill coming out of the Senate Democratic leadership, which funds John Cullerton on the Senate Democratic plan. That funds all public universities at their final FY15 appropriation level, which for us is $91 million flat funding. So those are the three legislative funding proposals that are on the table right now. Fast forward to the governor's budget address yesterday, which I noticed today in the headlines was being touted as an education-friendly budget. That is partially correct. The governor's comments, and well as his budget book, focuses heavily on K-12, support for K-12, funding increases for early childhood education, and for public universities includes a 20% reduction from the FY15 final appropriation. There is no FY16 budget discussed in his budget book, By the way, it is about a 600-page budget book that I cozied up with last night, so I'm a little groggy today. But so there's no FY16 plan laid out in the book, but there is an estimated spending column for FY16, and I noticed the figures in that estimated spending column are consistent with the budget, with the 31.5% budget he proposed for us last year at this time. So I guess the good news coming out of to summarize a little bit is that currently there's no legislation that would cut our proposed legislation that would cut our funding at the 31.5% funding level. I think that's about as good as I can do right now. I would like to walk you through Table 1, which is the third page of a three-page document at your desk, and folks in the audience have this too. I kind of wanted to take just a little bit of time to describe the figures, since there are so many during this budget development process. Now, you'll notice I'm calling this FY16 and FY17 budget process. Just real quickly, you can see I've highlighted Northern in the middle of the table in the blue. You'll see that our original appropriation for FY15 was $93 million. We ended the year, however, at $91 million. There was a 2.25% reduction near the end of FY15. You notice I'm referring to that as our base funding level. The reason I'm calling that the base is because any type of 16 or 17 proposal on the table right now, whenever they're considering the impact, they're comparing it to our FY15 final appropriation. Last year at this time, the governor's budget proposal for us was $63.8 million, which was the 31.5% cut. Last May, the General Assembly approved a funding level for us, which was an 8.6% reduction. You'll see the 85,171.7 figure. That was 8.6% reduction. The governor vetoed that on June 25th last year. And then yesterday, in the final column, you'll see the governor's budget as proposed yesterday for us, $72.8 million, which again is you'll notice the far right column, 20% across the board reduction for all universities, including us. There was a post late last night on Capital Facts that described the governor's budget impact on universities was a range of 25 to 27%, and it listed NIU as the largest reduction at 27%. Those figures were incorrect. I communicated with legislative staff and my counterparts at other universities throughout the night on that and actually distributed this table to them with copies of the appropriate budget book pages just to let them know that the proposal is an across-the-board 20% reduction. So if you see 27% for Northern, that is incorrect. The other thing I would like to point out on this table is you'll see at the bottom I put a couple of other items of note just for your information. I included the MAP program funding as it is for the past couple of years and what the governor's proposed level is. But most importantly, I wanted to point out the university performance funding line, the last line on the table. In previous years, funding for performance funding has been a carve-out, a set-aside. Universities' base budgets have been reduced by 0.05% to create a pool. Since there has been no funding to support a performance funding initiative, they've taken it out of our base budgets, then redistributed the money based on the criteria. So that's why you'll see for the first several columns, it's been about $6.1 million. It's a non-add. It is not added to the funding levels above. It's actually come out of those amounts to be reallocated. The difference in the governor's budget is that he's proposing a $50 million lump sum grant that would go to the Illinois Board of Higher Education for distribution to universities based on performance funding. Dr. Phillips and I have been hearing for years that there's been a desire on legislators across the board to increase the amount of funding that is based on performance. So this is really not a surprise to us when we saw this, but just wanted to mention that if this budget were to go through in this manner, there would be a pot of funds in addition to the base budget of $72.8 million, there would be a pot of funds that would we would be able to compete for based on the criteria set aside by the IBHE. I think with that, I'll stop and ask if anybody has any questions.
Questions? Yes.
What are the performance criterion?
Boy, that is a great question, and I've got a spreadsheet on my desk that says, let's see, Al.
Even in general terms, it would be fine.
Degrees conferred, undergraduate degrees conferred. I believe there's a graduation rate component. There is a research component. Dr. Phillips, do you have?
Yeah, basically there are, I think there are nine or.
Oh, that's not going to work.
There are actually, I think, about
10 criteria, and I believe it's five subcategories. As Mike said, mostly based on completion, retention rates. We also look at time to graduation. There's a public service and research component, and the subcategories are there are additional weights for African American, Hispanic, low income, and adult students and those who are in STEM programs that multiply, that provide a multiplying factor to those numbers. In the past, as Mike said, the allocation was 0.5%, which equated to $6 million out of the higher education funding to the public universities. They're proposing upping that to $50 million. Which would be probably about 5%, I'm guessing, pretty close of our funding would be based on the performance funding model.
I'd be curious in your immediate reaction to that. While different, surely doesn't strike me as necessarily bad. And we would have a chance to sharpen our knives, right, and get a bigger piece of that pie the better we did. Is that your reaction, or is it?
My reaction is that it wouldn't be bad if we weren't cut 20% to start off with. Community college funding was held flat, and then in addition, they have a $9 million pot of performance funding that they can go after and compete for. Our situation here is that the universities are being cut $240 million, and then there's a $50 million pot to go after. The 190.
Yeah, I got the first part right. Okay. Yeah.
Good answer. I've studied this for the past 10 years, performance funding and what works and what doesn't work around the country, and there's basically two models. One is a model in which the legislature puts a pot of money there and says, we're going to reward schools that get to places we want them to go. The other model is, we're going to cut all your budgets, and we're going to create a pool, and you all can fight over it. And so when that happens, what you're incenting is competition rather than collaboration, and so you get competition across sectors, often with community colleges and universities, where they don't want to work with each other. So the models that look like they work are ones that are simple, that have a small number of criteria, and then that create a pool for people to go after as a reward rather than a punishment. The other piece that I've seen around the country that works is that is when there's stable funding. So for our university and all the universities in the state, our analysis is, in real dollars, since 2002, we've lost half of our appropriations. Let that sink in. You know, we've lost half of our spending power since 2002. We're now looking at another dramatic cut, and then there's some crumbs that are put out for performance funding. So if you look at the economic pressures that are changing our behaviors, it has very little to do with performance funding. It has to do with the intense competition in higher education and the fact that we have half the spending power we used to. So we're making incredible adjustments in the university. And this kind of reward that's put out there is just a little piece in a much stronger current. We're going through strategic planning, program prioritization. We're looking at every dollar we spend. None of that has to do anything with performance funding. It has to do with us trying to fulfill our mission with the limited resources we have. So in some ways, this is not going to move what we're doing. We're doing what we're supposed to be doing to fulfill our mission, to help our faculty and staff be successful so they can help students be successful. So the concept is good, but it's got to be framed in a very different environment than we've got right now.
Thank you. Any other questions? Bob?
Mike, you mentioned the veto possibility on the first bill. Any idea on the second two bills of whether they would be successful or not?
Both of those bills are still in first reading in their individual houses. I can't imagine the Senate bill that holds us at flat funding will go anywhere. So right now it's very hard to say what's going to move. There wasn't a lot of optimism yesterday floating around at the Capitol. I will tell you that. I'll just leave it at that.
Any other questions from the trustees? I do have one question, Mike, and I want to be sensitive to time because I do want to focus on the positive things today and hear about our research. But what strikes me in the conversation we've had this morning is if you could give us very briefly a philosophical overview, and perhaps a philosophical overview from the governor's office versus the legislature. I'm perplexed where we talk about education in the state of Illinois and a strong commitment to the word education, and yet we seem to be focused on K through 12. Philosophically, what is being said in terms of responsibility and commitment? Is it being seen that a state's commitment is to provide the basic of education, which takes you through high school, and then after that, there's certainly less responsibility? Can you just give us more of a philosophical perspective, especially from both camps, if you can?
Boy, that's easy. I can say that during the course of my career in higher ed, which started in 1986, there have been various administrations that have made it very clear that exactly what you're saying, the state's responsibility is K-12, or in Springfield, little kids. In Springfield, it's little kids and big kids. When I first started my career, and I'm sorry, that's how it's referred to in the Capitol. When I first started my career, I was told that higher education is the sixth priority in a state with five priorities. When funding was sufficient, higher education did very well in the 90s. The high water mark for public universities was fiscal year 02. Our appropriation in 02 was $118 million, and now we're talking about $63 and $73 and $80 million. So when times have gotten tighter, philosophies of certain administrations have been exactly what you said. K through 12 is the priority. Higher ed, students and families pay tuition. That's a user tax. That's their responsibility. They benefit from the education. They pay the price. So
I guess what I'm saying, too, is that we need to be cognizant. This is not just a financial debate. This really becomes a basic tenet, philosophical debate of the role and responsibility of the state, and I think we're seeing it played out now. Right. We may have talked about it in the past, but now we're seeing the manifestation of
right.
it.
Right.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
We want to extend both our congratulations and our condolences to Dr. Quider on the birth of her daughter, and then she had a death in the family. So she's not available to be with us today, and Dr. Blasey will give the federal relations update.
Thank you, Chair Muir. Is it okay with the board if I sit here and make my comments?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, the good news is that Dr. Quider has returned from maternity leave, but unfortunately she can't be with us today, and I'll do my best to match her enthusiasm, but I'm sure you'll recognize I won't even come close. I have three sets of comments. One is on the general status of the federal budget. Second set of comments on some of the highlights, presidential initiatives, And then my final set of comments will be with regard to our activities in terms of engagement on the Hill and with the administration. So as you know, the federal budget has dominated the national conversation for the past several months, certainly the conversation in Washington. And the most significant event was the passage in December of fiscal year 2016, the appropriations package to fund all of the agencies through September 2016. In this package, Congress raised the sequester caps by $50 billion for FY16 and $30 billion for FY17, making some room for further discretionary spending programs, some of them affecting NIU, especially in education and in research. So Federal Relations is currently working with our delegation on the FY17 appropriations process, which began this month when the President released his budget proposal. Currently, we're working with the senior cabinet to pull together our documentation on priorities. Many of the delegation, the offices of the delegation have asked for it starting next week, and we have consulted with the senior cabinet and are in the process of putting together our requests or our priorities. To put it mildly, the 2016 election is affecting the tone on Capitol Hill and the relationship between Congress and the administration. It's probably as contentious as it has ever been, and things are going to happen in unexpected ways, and we'll just have to be ready to play along with them as they occur. Within this complex federal landscape, we're tracking a couple of strongly emergent themes that touch on two of NIU's main equities, college affordability and research investments. So reducing or eliminating the cost of higher ed for students is an active area for comment and policy proposals spanning Congress, President Obama, and all of the presidential candidates, and that will be part of our federal priorities statement. Also, President Obama has launched a new cancer moonshot task force led by Vice President Biden, as well as a computer science for all initiative. As a starting point with Congress, his budget proposals increase research for funding several federal agencies along the lines of those two initiatives. And those are initiatives that should have benefit at NIU, and we'll just need to be working with our delegation to ensure that we're well positioned to do so. I'll now make a few comments on our engagement, which is a very important aspect of the federal office. We're continuing to work closely with our delegation to showcase NIU's leadership in education, research, artistry, and service. And you mentioned that perhaps we should have another event. We've been considering appropriate venues moving in 2016 and into FY 2017. Have already started discussions with President Baker along those lines. And as soon as Anna is back fully online, we'll start making decisions on how to pursue those. In October of last year, 9 members of the Illinois delegation, including both senators, signed a congressional welcome letter for NIU's annual STEM Fest. They tweeted it. They retweeted it. It had quite an impact, and it was widely recognized on the Hill for what it is, a real main event, a highlight of STEM Ed. The letter actually stated world-class STEM research educators and innovators at Northern Illinois University. It praised them and expressed bipartisan commitment to funding STEM Ed. So we got members on both sides of the aisle to sign that letter, and that was also no small feat because the staffers actually had to talk to each other. In November, Representative Kinzinger hosted 21 academic fellows from Southeast Asia as part of a Department of State-sponsored program. He is really keen on international engagement, and we're going to continue to work with him on such programs. In February, this month, Senator Durbin highlighted NIU's proton CT scan research in a Senate floor speech about the Department of Energy and the reasons to support the Department of Energy, and NIU was the only university highlighted. So I'll just remind Provost Freeman that it turned out that that wasn't such a bad investment after all. Dr. Anna Quiter is always available to discuss federal issues or opportunities, so please don't hesitate to contact her. She's willing to help you further your programs in any way she can on the Hill. And then, if I may, I'd just like to echo your comments on the sponsored projects, success in sponsored projects that we've had this year. I think it's remarkable that the faculty are maintaining their pace of research and scholarship and artistry given our financial pressures. As Dara pointed out in her report, we're almost exactly on track at the same level of activity as we were last year, within a few tenths of a percent, in fact. It's rather remarkable. And I think that's really credit to our faculty, but also to the entire administration for finding the means to support them in this really difficult time.
Okay. I would like to make a comment on that, because what strikes me is I don't find it remarkable. I would expect no less from this faculty. And I think that in times of difficulty, regardless of what that might be, those with strong moral fiber will rise to the occasion. And I think NIU has been tested at different times in our history. And so I truly would expect no less from this faculty. This faculty is strong. It is committed. It is knowledgeable. And I think that this faculty will continue to see the opportunity when others might not be as resilient. I think NIU will come out on top because of this culture that we have of rising to the occasion and doing what we should be doing and doing our job well. So,
I won't argue with you.
Yep. Okay. I think that's a great segue to a presentation by our faculty. And we're very excited this morning to have Professor Paul Wright and Dr. Mark Van Overbeek, I hope I said that correctly, Associate Dean of the College of Education. Since we initiated this committee under the vision of Dr. Butler as an ad hoc committee when he was chair, and as we've moved into a full committee, it's been our commitment to really try and educate our community, both internal and external community, as to the specificity of what we're doing in the field of research. And so we try and dedicate a strong portion of each of our committees to highlight a different college and to highlight a different project. So welcome this morning, and we look forward to your comments.
Thank you, and good morning. I will admit that this is a challenging task to look at to look at education and research across the College of Education, because there is so much great stuff going on. But I want to take just a little bit of time to provide a brief overview and then pass it off to Dr. Wright, who can give you more detail about a very specific project that I think encapsulates a lot of the work we're trying to do across the college. As the slides show, one of the things that we are... There we go. One of the reasons, as I said, that it's difficult to talk about and encapsulate research across the college is because there's so much going on. As you can see, we have roughly 17 grant-funded projects right now, grant-funded and also work training grants totaling about $8 million. That's $8 million over the life of the grant, so it's not just $8 million right this year. But faculty are working on these large-scale, multi-year projects. They're working on projects that are much smaller in scope and scale. They're getting funding from multiple sources, both internal and external sources. And sometimes they're not getting funding at all, but they're taking advantage of opportunities within the college to get some grant money. But many faculty are doing the work because it's what they're passionate about, as you mentioned earlier. And it's part of their job, and it's part of what they get paid to do. And so they continue to do that because it's really the exciting part of one of the things that they want to do. And what I hope to emphasize also is that they're incorporating that research into their teaching. So it's not that research is necessarily informing teaching or teaching is forming research. It's all together, and it's all encapsulated in the way that they work with students. Those projects that are funded in the College of Education by external grants, it's a rather wide variety, from the Spencer Foundation and the National Academy of Education in Chicago to the National Science Foundation to the U.S. Department of Education, as well as internal grants, both at the university level from research and artistry grants, but also internal grants from the dean's office to support research. And those dean's grants have been geared towards pilot projects. So what can faculty do that will give them enough data to submit really strong grant applications, and then ideally that will turn into external funding for projects down the road? Another reason it's challenging to talk about education, talk about research in the College of Education, is because there are so broad fields that make up the college. We have six departments, but within those departments are multiple programs and multiple disciplines. Faculty are looking at research topics from a number of different disciplinary perspectives. We have historians, we have philosophers, we have quantitative researchers, we have folks who are interested in literacy and reading, folks who are interested in science and technology and engineering fields, folks who are looking at bilingual, ESL. It's a wide variety of fields that make up the college and make up the research that our faculty do, while also at the same time we even ask different questions in different ways about the same topic. And one of the things that is exciting in my role as associate dean is to be able to look at the faculty and the work that they're doing and to be really excited about the work that's going on, because it is pulling together from broad interdisciplinary perspectives to answer questions. But there are some common characteristics that define all the different projects and all the different fields. So regardless of whether we use different methodologies or ask different questions, what I think really defines research in the College of Education is this idea of immediate applicability. How can the research that we're doing in the college apply immediately to K-12 classrooms or to higher education centers or to community agencies or to policy research? And so even topics on like the history of education, which is one of my areas, and the history of college access then becomes a white paper about how do we make it more comfortable and easier for students to come into college. How do we make that transition more useful? How do we recruit students? And then how do we create a community here? So while on the surface, some of the projects may not look to be immediately applicable to the reality, to the work that we do every day, the projects really are in one way or another. We also work on and focus on multiple partners and collaboration, and that's a key aspect of what we do, not just collaborating across the college, but collaborating across the university, and as Dr. Wright does, certainly collaborating with colleagues nationally and internationally. So I know we have research projects currently that are going on in the UK, with colleagues in Australia, with colleagues in Japan, and really pulling together multiple perspectives, which then influences and affects the work that we can do in classrooms for our students. And then I know that Dr. Wright is also going to talk about the importance of working with students, in both graduate students and undergraduate students. And that's really a key component of how in the college we approach research, is how do we bring students into this? How do we train them also to be researchers? And you can see that in 2014, that's the last year for which we have complete data. We're a couple of weeks away from complete data for the past calendar year. But our faculty are productive, and they're publishing. And depending on their field, the publication of choice may be the book, or it may be journal articles, or it may be edited volumes. But we're publishing books, we're publishing chapters, we're publishing journals, we're publishing work in non-traditional settings, because one of the goals is how do we make our research accessible to a wider audience? How do we reach multiple people, not just academics? How do we reach teachers in K-12 classrooms, for example? How do we reach the public? And we do that through conferences and presentations, but also through perspective series on WNIJ. If you've been in the car and you've been listening, you'll hear a lot of our faculty speaking as part of that series. But I want to just spend a quick couple of minutes and then pass it off to Paul to talk about how in the college we're trying to support research. And one of the things that we did this past year was to reconfigure a couple of positions. And we reconfigured those positions so that they are working with school districts, they're working with community agencies and centers to make partnership arrangements, to bring the college into greater and tighter partnerships with those schools. And that benefits certainly our students who need placements for student teaching and clinical experiences, but it also benefits our faculty and our doctoral and master's students who need to do research in the schools, want to do research in the schools, want to do research in a community agency, that we've tried to facilitate that access to the schools, those partnerships, by having staff work closely on developing those partnerships. We also, as I mentioned earlier, have dean's grants, which are really seeded towards helping pilot projects for external grants. We've been putting together workshops and events. We had one on Tuesday for new faculty. Dr. Wright participated in that as well. And it was really an opportunity for new faculty to work with our more senior faculty on how do you take an idea, how do you take it to a research project, how do you get it published, how do you take the dissertation, move it into a publication, how do you create a solid research agenda and a solid research identity. And I think Dr. Wright would concur with me, but one of my final comments when the panel was finished was that the search committees had done their job because they were amazing faculty asking the right questions and really excited about the work that they were doing. And it was great from my perspective to be able to see that because there was a lot of energy in the room. There'll be an event next Wednesday. It was for undergraduates. And it's really focused on how do undergraduates take a paper that they wrote for a class and turn that into a presentation and turn that into a publication. So how can undergraduates be more involved in developing research and take their own ideas into a publication? There'll be a similar one for grad students, and there'll be a research symposium in April to help prepare our students for presentations to national and international audiences. So how can you, we want to provide a context, a friendly environment in which they can prepare their work and present before going in front of a national audience. We've also created writing groups and opportunities for faculty to work together with each other, either because they're collaborating on projects or they're at the same stage in a project, but it's another level of support for the work that they do. And then just very quickly, I want to highlight two projects that faculty are working on. And I could have highlighted any number of projects, but the principal investigators for these two projects are going to be here in the next subcommittee meeting. And I thought you could put a face to a name, and if you had a question, you could certainly talk to them during the break. But Dr. Suzanne Deggs-White, who's the chair of the Department of Counseling, Adult, and Higher Education, and she is one who works closely with WNIJ on a perspective series and is often on the radio talking about her research, but she's looking at adult relationships and how do those adult relationships affect the way you envision yourself, your own emotional health as an adult. We tend to focus on friendships in younger ages, but what about adults and how important are friendships for adults? And not just adult friendships, but adult sibling friendships and relationships. And she's been talking a lot about that work and trying to make it accessible to wide audiences. And then one other project that is of interest and of note is Dr. Carrie Cortegast, who is an assistant professor in her third year in the Department of Counseling, Adult, and Higher Education. And she's interested in LGBTQ students and how they internalize what goes on a campus and how that affects their identity, their sense of self, their sense of safety and security. And you can see that there's an image here of a gender-neutral bathroom. And one of the projects that she's working on is to give students cameras and to ask them to take pictures of images on campus that really stand out for them and that affect them in one way or another. And then to think about those images and how that shapes your identity and how that shapes that sense of security and safety on campus. And so a gender-neutral bathroom is a very powerful symbol and a very powerful message that the university is sending, especially to transgender students. And so her research looks at the ways in which very small things can make a profound difference in how students do in college and how well they do. But I want to turn it over now to Dr. Wright, who can talk a little bit more specifically about a project and the excitement and the exciting aspects of the work that he's doing. And I want to just mention before handing it to him that he's dedicated to really involving students in his work, and so much so that you just received the, or are going to receive the Outstanding Mentor Award from your association. So congratulations on that. But I know the work that he's doing is really encapsulates a lot of the work in the college, and I want to give him a chance to explain that and talk about that.
Thank you, Mark, and good morning, everyone. It's truly an honor to be here presenting in front of this group and also to be asked to represent the College of Education. There's so many great researchers that I work with, and it's humbling to be selected as one to get up here and try to represent the sort of work we do in the college. Let me go right to work here. That was the title. This is, I'll give you just a brief overview, probably the best way to set up without conceptual frameworks, what I do. Please raise your hand if you've ever heard the mantra, sport builds character. You may or may not believe it, but if you've heard it, okay. That's not a conceptual framework. I would agree that sport has the potential to build character, but what type of character, we need to ask. We know from what we hear in the media about sport that a lot of bad things can happen in the name of sport, around ethics and parent behavior, coaches promoting aggression, winning at all costs. Those are moral lessons that are being taught, but they're not appropriate. So I definitely believe that sport can build character, but my work focuses on the idea of how can we do that intentionally. Now, this can be competitive sport or after-school programs or in-school physical education, but my work essentially is about using sport and physical activity as a vehicle to work with children in promoting positive values and teaching life skills. It's a very interactive, social, and emotional environment. If you can teach a child how to control their mouth and their temper in a basketball game, that's better than role-playing, in my opinion. That's very authentic. They're charged, they're heated, it's in the moment. That's a great opportunity to teach lessons about how you conduct yourself and how you treat other people. I just refer to a couple frameworks up there just to make the point that this work I do is relevant in after-school programs, summer camps, competitive sport, and usually that term positive youth development through sport is used to refer to those areas. But it's also extremely relevant to K-12 education. Illinois, for example, has adopted social and emotional learning standards. Every subject area, every grade level, teachers in the state, whether they know it or not, are expected to be teaching kids about dispositions and life skills, how they conduct themselves, how they treat other people. Teaching personal and social responsibility is the specific model that I work with. It's an instructional model that my mentor developed through 40 years of field work, most of that done in inner city settings, working with children who are often labeled as at risk because of through no fault of their own, but because of life factors and the zip code they grow up in. But this idea focuses on shifting responsibility to children and helping them to develop responsibilities and life skills. And this just gives you a sense of how we frame those when we talk about it in academic settings. The last note there is probably the most important part of this model. It's the idea of transfer. So the way I look at it, if you think of a sport context, if you're going to teach someone how to do a bounce pass, you don't just put a poster on the wall and say, don't figure it out. You demonstrate the skill. You break it down. You let the children practice it. You give them feedback. You let them make mistakes. You coach them. If we're going to teach children about leadership, I think we have to do the same thing. We don't just put a poster on the wall that says leadership. We have to show them what that looks like, put them in charge of other kids, give them chances to practice that and develop that skill. We try to do that in the program setting, but always our emphasis is, can they transfer that to other parts of life? So we focus on transferable life skills, like goal setting, decision making, peaceful conflict resolution. How can they take that to other parts of their life? So just I'll give you two snapshots of within my program of research places I'm using this model. One is very local. It's a small-scale action research project that I run at a local middle school here. It's an after-school program for boys who have been identified as falling through the cracks. These are some of the specific life skills we focus on, things like teamwork, effort, self-control, persistence. Can clearly be developed in the sport context, but we talk directly with the youth about how those can be used in other parts of their life. A couple things I'll say about this project is I call it an action research project, but we do generate scholarship. We present on this work. We publish from this work. It's a great demonstration site that I can run. So I've had colleagues from the U.S., throughout the U.S. and other countries, come to visit me to learn about this work. And it's great to have a demonstration site I can take them to and let them see it in practice. It's also a training site for my students. I've had graduate, I'll say doctoral, master's, and undergraduate students work with me side by side running this program. So they're not just learning the research in this area and the academic side of it. They're really learning how to work with kids, how to develop relationships with community partners. Now, the other end of the spectrum is a much larger international project. I currently have a grant from the U.S. State Department to work with a small country of Belize. This is just south of Mexico. It's a country of only 370,000, the entire population. But they are on the U.S. watch list and have been for years because of high levels of interpersonal violence. That was the reason I got this grant was to introduce this idea of TPSR and positive youth development through sport and work with several organizations throughout the nation that offer youth sport programming to try to get them to come together as a coalition to do more with sport than just competition and physical skill development, but to really create a culture of positive values and teach life skills that will help children in other areas. I want to leave time for questions, so I'm going through this quickly, but I just want to say in these projects, from local and small scale to larger funded projects that are international in scope, a common theme, just like Mark had mentioned, is the idea of involving students. In the Belize project, I've also taken doctoral, master's, and undergraduate students with me to do trainings down there. They've been in meetings with us and the ambassador from the U.S. to Belize. We've involved community partners that we work with. There's a group in Chicago in the Little Village neighborhood, which is the most gang-torn and violent area in the city of Chicago. There's a gentleman there, Rob Castaneda, who runs youth development programs. He takes me on as a consultant to help him with evaluation. I've brought him in as a consultant on the Belize grant to go down there with the team each year to help provide training for coaches and youth workers. So we have this great integration of, you know, I've never been to one of these meetings. I didn't know President Baker would be here, so I'm not trying to get brownie points. But I really buy this. I really like the idea of this triangle offense where what we do, we really try to integrate the idea of what the students are learning in theory, how can they work with that in practice, and how do we get them out in the field, whether that's half a mile away or just south of Mexico, to have a more enriching experience. So as I said, I wanted to leave time for questions, so I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. We certainly have a rich history at NIU in education, and appreciate these comments in terms of the practicality of the implication of what your research is and working with students on a day-to-day basis. That's excellent. Questions from the trustees? President Baker, did you like his triangle?
I saw it somewhere before.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah. Good job.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Are there any other matters requiring the attention of this committee today? Hearing none, the next committee meeting is set for 11 a.m. on May 19th. May I have a motion to adjourn? Second. All in favor?
Aye.
We stand adjourned. Thank you very much.